Ladies and gentlemen, once again, the Student Game coming at you live here once again. I do not have my normal partners in crime here, Weasel and Chris, with me. I gave them February off because it was a grueling season, but a fun one to watch. Instead, I have other high-class talent. We're going with sister networks. We're going with team-up of elite skill from all these sister networks. And, of course, I'm referring to, of course, the Sports Chronicles Radio Network, of course, which I am currently on with you here tonight, the Football Reporters Online, and the Go Network. Looking to be a lot of positive stuff. We'll have TJ, or as I call him, the Hammer, on later. But first, let's go ahead and break it down. First, from Football Reporters Online, we'll go to Dr. Bill Chakas. Dr. Bill, what's going on, man?
How you guys doing tonight, Kyle? It's a very interesting offseason so far.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, this show, we're not going to focus as much. I mean, there'll probably be some off-season talk because, you know, we're all fans of the sport here, but I'm having trouble letting this season go just because it was a good season. Yeah, I know I'm a Niner fan and the Niners lost in the Super Bowl, but there's plenty of teams and fans that had to watch my team play in the Super Bowl instead of watching their teams play in it. So I'm going to go ahead and be happy with that. I'll leave it at that. But
nothing to be ashamed of, man. They put up a good season.
Absolutely. Going next down the list here, the CEO, the one I call the boss man all too often, the man they call Nicky Fick, Nick Ficcarelli. What's going on, Nick?
You know, I came into this night as prepared as I've ever been for any radio show, just for the sheer fact of the firepower that's going to be here for this special episode. I'm locked, I'm loaded, but I also have my blindfold and my cigarette at the ready.
When it comes to ammunition, Gatling guns don't have anything on what's going to go on here on tonight's show. And one such example is the very talented Joey Stats, joining us from Go Network. I talked with him one time, and Lamont the Sportsologist, as well as TJ, on the Blow the Whistle show there. And I'll tell you, Joey, you're the one guy who really just completely toppled me with a stat before. Not even Statboy did it in quite the way you did in talking about, you know, Colin Kaepernick and Alex Smith. There are guys who crunch numbers. You use numbers to crunch arguments. Joey Stats, welcome aboard.
And I have got nothing but the best for this show this evening. I have done my research. My wife has exiled me to the basement because of all the work I've put into coming up with information for the topics we're going to be discussing tonight, and I can't wait to get into it.
Wow. Nicky Fix, be afraid.
I'm
be
dead.
Very afraid.
I'm dead. I'm just saying right now, I'm dead. But I'll give it a shot. I'll give it a shot. I know what I'm going against. I'll give it a shot.
Oh, hey, you know, David facing Goliath and all
I'll
that stuff here.
Way. Yeah. I have nothing better to do than crunch numbers.
With that, hopefully with Dr. Bill's help here, I can keep you boys honest. And then at 8:30, of course, we'll have TJ join us in later. He'll probably be in around the time we're talking RG3 or Joe Flacco. But I wanted to get something off the ground, and this is really in your wheelhouse, Joey Stats. I have been writing, talking, and just profusely proliferating the theory that a lot of the success connected to your precious New England Patriots is the fact that they play in a division that's so easy Courtney Love looks like Kilimanjaro. That's what I'm trying to say. But I'm sure you have some numbers to crunch, some things that may refute or deny. Go ahead and take us with this one since this is your team, sir.
Well, see, when it comes to the Patriots, I do agree that they are in a very easy division. Of the people in that division, I believe the Patriots are actually the only one over 500 at the end of the year. The combined record of everybody they played against was 126-128-2. But what people don't look at are of the teams that they played, six of them were all playoff contenders. The Ravens, Broncos, Seahawks, Colts, Texans, and Niners. And of that, they only lost four games all year, two of them being to the two teams that went to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, you can say that they have a weak schedule, but it's not so much the schedule as it is the division, which that's not really their fault, but neither is their schedule.
you know, and this is what I love the it's not their fault argument, and I can't just single out Patriots fans when it comes to that. I've also heard it back when the Colts beat the Bears in the Super Bowl. The only reason why that team got to the Super Bowl was a ridiculously easy schedule, and every Bears fan I talked to about it, well, that's not our fault, as if, like, you know.
But if you're going to look at easy schedules, you need to look at the Broncos.
Oh, yeah.
Whose combined schedule, the winning percentage of the teams they played against was at, like, 40.1%.
Yeah, I was actually going to take that into account as well, but you beat me there, Joey Stats. It's all good. Let me go ahead and bring in Dr. Bill on this one. As far as the Patriots, do you think they are profusely good because of a weaker schedule, or do you think that there are other factors that come into play? Like, I notice, for example, they're 1-3 against the NFC West. That's a talented squad, though. I mean, give us your feelings in that particular direction for the Patriots.
You know, the schedule is part of it. But there are other, like you said, there are other factors that lead into this, okay? The fact that, you know, Belichick has his offensive assistants reshape and remold the offense every couple of years to do something different so that, you know, people are caught off guard. I mean, let's face it. I mean, Jake Ballard was a huge contributor this year for the Patriots. That was, you know, one of the most stunning moves I've ever seen in my whole life.
Yeah, absolutely. Belichick, really, with that defense, I mean, look, having the wherewithal to acquire Hakeem Talib and the difference he made in the short amount of time he was there, you know, that says plenty for that front office in the first place. Nick, let me go to you before I weigh in on this myself. Any addition to thoughts on the Patriots and their ability to be talented besides their weak schedule?
Now, yeah, I got to be honest with you guys. I personally think that no matter what the schedule is, you still got to go out and play 16 games during the year. And the way that the Patriots have completely dominated the regular season for the last almost what feels like eternity is just a testament to Belichick, the front office, Tom Brady, and the New England Patriots. Now, yes, they have struggled on defense. They struggled on defense for quite some time. And it was a very shrewd pickup to get Talib, and you saw a big difference in the defensive secondary the second half of the season when it happened. However, when Talib went out, you know, I believe it was during the Baltimore game, you saw what happened, that when you take away a very, very good cornerback, what happens to a secondary that really, honestly, wasn't that good to begin with. So we could say that the Patriots have a schedule in which they play teams that are at less than 50% in the winning percentage thing, but it doesn't matter if it's 50%, 60%, 20%, it don't matter. You have to walk out onto that field and you have to play the football game. And if you play the football game and if you win, it's a testament to your team, it's a testament to coaching. It doesn't matter.
You know, I'm all for the Herm Edwards, you play to win the game defense. I really am. I'm a Herm Edwards guy and all that, and that's no offense to any Patriots fans. I'm not a Jet fan myself. I love that speech. That's how football's meant to be played. But it helps when you have something in front of you that's very easy. You know, it's very simple. Like, for example, take the Bears who are on the outside looking in, or the Steelers who are on the outside looking in. All they needed is one of those two games to go back their way, and all of a sudden they're in the hunt. That one game difference makes a difference, especially when you happen to play, say, for example, the AFC North, where, you know, probably, well, at least for it'll probably end going into 2013, but for at least the past few years, arguably the toughest division in football. My beef is the Patriots wins. They beat the Colts. They had a winning record. They did very solid. They beat the Broncos, who, Joey Stats put it very well himself, probably the only team out here with easily a more simple record to play against. And they knocked out the Texans, who really didn't look like they belonged there. So I got three teams with winning records. Now, that's well improved over the one team with a winning record that they beat in the regular season last year. And they didn't do that till the playoffs, where they got handed the AFC Championship game. That being said, there is, look, you get points for consistency. This is the NFL, no question. But when consistency, when part of that is having to take a billy club to a pillow, this is, I don't know. It just kind of proves my theory about, you know, the Patriots being a bit soft. I'll go ahead and say it there, Joey Stats. I'm sorry.
I mean, I wouldn't say that they're soft. I mean, you don't win 10 division titles in 13 years by being soft. I mean, the division hasn't always been weak. It's just in recent history, I'd say in probably the past 4 to 5 of those years, yeah, the Dolphins have fallen off the radar. You got the Bills, who, 2 years ago were, 9-1 at one point during the season. I mean, they were doing incredible, and then they fell off the radar. I mean, yeah, right now they are playing in definitely probably one of the easiest divisions besides the division that the Broncos are in. But, I mean, they still play some tough games. I mean, when you look at it, it's all about, I mean, it's like Nikki Figg was saying, it's all about showing up and actually playing. That's why you play the games. No game is a given. I mean, any day you could walk out on the field and get beat by the Jaguars. They did win 2 games this year.
That's true. I mean, and I'm not even like, I was tempted to make fun of the Patriots about losing to the Cardinals, but that's before they had all the problems that they would have throughout the season. But I got to say, Nikki Figg, well, actually, before I take it to Nick, I got to say, Joey Stats, there's one thing. Tom Brady got taken down by an official. I mean, do you have an answer for that? I just have to ask the question.
Tom, I will be the first one to admit that Tom Brady is a punk.
Wow.
He will fall down if a feather hits him and you complain that a flag wasn't thrown. I'll be the first person to say that.
This is why.
As a quarterback and as a person throwing.
Whoa.
Whoa.
He called him a punk.
He is a punk.
This is why Johnny Stats is the only Patriots fan I respect.
Of football. He will take a flop to try to get a call in a heartbeat.
Wow, we can go multi-sport here and ask one day who the bigger flopper is, Vlade DeVos or Tom Brady. But I digress. At any rate, gentlemen, I think I've given Johnny Stats enough of a hard time and gotten him properly angry to thoroughly thrash Nick at any point he attempts to meet. So let's go ahead and go over to the Rookie of the Year discussion here with RG3 and his worthiness as the Rookie of the Year. Now, and I don't say this with any offense to either you, Joey Stats, or me and Nick's partner in crime, Drew Glukov, who we affectionately refer to as Stat Boy. Stats are great for a lot of measurements, but unfortunately there are some places they are overused. Now, don't get me wrong, guys. Offensive and defensive player of the year, stats rule, and they should, in my humble opinion. But as the rookie of the year, I mean, are stats the only driving factor there? Nick, I'm going to take it to you to lead off.
Stats are definitely not the driving factor. Now, this was probably the closest rookie of the year vote I've ever seen. And the reason why I say that is because you had 3 quarterbacks, not 2, 3 quarterbacks that were worthy of being named Rookie of the Year in RG3, Andrew Luck, and Russell Wilson. You look at the 3 teams that they played for this season, and you look at their records from last season, and the turnaround for each franchise by each player is just absolutely insane. Now, do I agree that RG3 won the Rookie of the Year? You'll be shocked to hear this. No, I'm not. I don't think so. And I'm not going to say it was Andrew Luck either.
Wow.
I personally would have voted for Russell Wilson. And the reason why I say that is because he was technically an afterthought in Seattle when they signed Matt Flynn to a 4-year, $10 million deal to be their starting quarterback. He came in as a third-round quarterback, you know, and Pete Carroll said, well, it's going to be an open competition, but no one. But then you're thinking it's Pete Carroll. You know, he'll just say things just to, like, get the blood boiling and stuff like that.
Well, any coach would say that.
Well, guess what? Russell Wilson took those words to heart and went out and promptly outplayed and outdid everything in the preseason to Matt Flynn, made Matt Flynn a very expensive visor boy, and led his team to a playoff berth and very close to upending the Atlanta Falcons in the divisional playoffs. He beat Tom Brady during the year in Seattle. He would either, no offense, Joey, I mean, it did happen.
No, I absolutely agree. But,
he, what do you call it? But if you look at him, you're looking at a guy that they say is 6 feet tall, but if you really show him, he's like 5'9", 5'10", no joke. I mean, he, to me, being that he was a third, he wasn't the sexy pick. He was, what do you call it? He was extremely, extremely effective. If I had a vote for Rookie of the Year, I would have went with Russell Wilson. But that's just me. That's just me.
Very compelling concept with the Russell Wilson go there. You're not the first time I've heard it, but I haven't heard it very much.
And right now, Quinn Jordan is probably blowing up my Twitter feed going, are you nuts?
Well,
you're absolutely right.
I mean, hey, I'm not going to give the Q a big time there or a hard time there. But here's the truth. Dude has some colored glasses that very conveniently seem to match the team colors of his team. I'm just saying. Joey Stats, I'm going to take it to you next. Huh? Okay, anyway, so apparently I'm interrupting another very important conversation. At any rate, Joey Stats, take it away. Let's go ahead and talk some RG3, man. What do you think about him as Rookie of the Year?
Well, going off of kind of what Nikki Figg was just saying, you have to look at where they came from, like the teams, and where they went, and how they changed from last year to this year. The Redskins were 5-11. The Colts were 2-14. Seattle was 7-9. Now, looking at that, Seattle still didn't make the playoffs last year, but they were like in the hunt at the very last game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, neither of the other two teams, I mean, Indianapolis was last place, and they went and won 11 games this year. And Washington Redskins, I mean, they weren't last place. They were fourth in the NFC, but they weren't last place overall. Looking at that, I would immediately take Russell Wilson out of contention because, yeah, he did help their team make the playoffs this year, but they pretty much have the same team that they had last year without him, you know?
Absolutely.
Because the other two teams, their rosters are very similar to what they had last year along the line, but the teams turned around from pretty much dead last in both of their divisions to first place. So then you have to kind of put it to the eye test. When I look at the eye test, I look at total touchdowns, total yards, all this other stuff, and though Andrew Luck is a better passer, I look at the overall player, and you look at the overall player. RG3 not only threw the ball very well, very accurate. I believe he broke a rookie record for passer rating this year with a 102.4.
Right.
He also threw 20 touchdowns and ran 7, which put him ahead of Russell Wilson for total touchdowns on the year. So, I mean, those are the things I look at. And when personally, even though he missed a game due to injury, I probably still would have given it to RG3.
Interesting. Before I take my turn to weigh in, I'm going to take it to the man who has more skill than anyone on this panel when it comes to being a scout of player talent in general, Dr. Bill. Any thoughts on RG3 as Rookie of the Year?
You know, I was suitably impressed with his play throughout most of the year. He did make some mistakes. I'm not going to call them rookie mistakes. I'm going to call them mistakes of youth. Because, you know, once you play a full season, you're not a rookie anymore. You've got a full season under your belt, you know, once you've experienced what he has. The only reason why I did give it to him and would have given it to him over Wilson and Luck was because, you know, like Joey just said, he is the more complete player because he can run as well as pass. He does have a very, very good throwing motion, even on the run. He does some things on the run, you know, with the ball, you know, throwing a pass. Reminds me much of a slightly smaller Josh Freeman, because Josh Freeman can run, throw the ball on the run for a guy his size, you know, and he runs like a 10-point Musso. So, you know, Griffin runs a lot, you know, that's what I came to my mind at the moment. But, Wilson runs a lot like Freeman does in the rolling pocket and out of the pocket. And that's something that maybe Wilson needs to learn a little more of. He did well, but to not throw some silly passes. Certainly, your quarterback, Kyle Kaepernick, got taken out of his game in the Super Bowl. He needs to not get rattled so easily. So there are a lot of guys that are running this move. You know, I don't even want to call it a pistol because not everybody's running the actual pistol, but it's a move. It's a moving pocket offense, and some guys have it down really good, and some are still learning its intricacies.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'll put the pistol in quotes, but that style of offense requires a quarterback who can make reads, and RG3 is certainly that. And, I mean, you know, we want to talk about Kaepernick getting taken out of his game. Here's what I know. Randy Moss quits on routes. Santana Moss does not. And Santana Moss made some excellent plays set up by RG3's solid throwing ability. But I walked through the 2012 schedule, and I got to tell you guys, I mean, first of all, Joey Stats made the point already that a 9-game turnaround for the Colts is something ridiculous. That's as many games as the Seahawks lost last year. An entire season's worth of losses now in your win column just because this guy's there. But Kyle, they barely beat a lot of crappy teams. Like, they just barely got past, you know, the Bills and the Jaguars and the Colts and, well, not the Colts, I'm sorry, the Titans. But the point is, they barely beat some bad teams. And you know what? Last year, without him, those are losses. I have here on my notebook 5 comeback victories led by 1 Andrew Luck. Does anybody have a comeback victory that happened for the Redskins during their season? Oh, yeah, they did come back, and they did beat the Ravens at the end of the game. Oh, no, wait, that was Kirk Cousins. Here's the thing about it. RG3 hasn't had to win a game towards the end of the game. The closest he had was when he happened to have the final score with about 6.5 minutes left in the game, and the defense took care of the rest. For me, the turnaround in wins to come on the field as a first-year guy and lead takes precedent over anything else. Now, please, gentlemen, let's be abundantly clear. We are really talking about 1A, 1B, and 1C this year because in other years where the rookie of the year race would have been slow, Ryan Tannehill is putting in a solid performance considering he has nothing around him. Brian Hartline is your top receiver. Really? But see, those stats don't look pretty, and the Dolphins didn't really advance.
Alfred Morris would have won it over Tannehill, though.
Exactly. I was going there next. Thank you, Joey Stats. We're of one mind today. I love that. The other thing is, Vic Ballard or Alfred Morris? I'm just going to go out on a limb and say all three of you guys would take Morris over Vic Ballard any day of the week, and you'd be right to do so. The fact that Alfred Morris is splitting MVP votes with RG3 and is another weapon that he can utilize, that's amazing. Now, to RG3's credit, the Colts had a better defense. Not to mention Brian Arakpo and Ryan Kerrigan were both out. They lost LaRon Landry in the offseason. Really, the defense wasn't what it was. That's that loss where it was 70 yards. There was a 70-yard pass to Victor Cruz to beat him against the Giants. Obviously, not his fault, but, you know, there's some crazy stuff going on there. As far as RG3's performance, but even still, a lot of extra weapons. Santana Moss, Alfred Morris, that's an awful lot of support. Now, he did have to deal with a lot of injuries in his offense, but hey, that happens. And he had Alfred Morris pretty much throughout the season to balance that out. You got to give this one to Andrew Luck.
We're also forgetting one more player, though, that nobody seems to mention because, you know, he didn't get much call. But a lot of people also forgot about Doug Martin. I mean, it was basically the year of the quarterback, but with Alfred Morris and Doug Martin, you could have had two very compelling reasons to choose either one of those running backs as your rookie of the year. Unfortunately, you know, when you have an RG3 and Andrew Luck and a Russell Wilson all coming at the same time, these two guys who combined for, I believe, almost over, 3,000 rushing yards, it's just one of those seasons.
See,
and meanwhile, on the off the field side of things, guys, you know, Morris and Doug Martin can't get a commercial to save their lot.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the quarterbacks are doing all these Subway commercials. Wilson and RG3, you know, sitting there doing commercials with Justin Tucker and Namagan Sue. You know, got to give their marketing people, their agents, capitalizing on the fact that they, you know, were special guys that were special first-year seasons.
Well, see, yeah, look, it's a legitimate point with the running backs, Alfred Morris especially. Looking at Doug Martin's numbers, I'm a little bit worried that he's a DeMarco Murray. What do I mean when I say that? Fair question. DeMarco Murray.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Well, I mean for the listening public more than anything else, gentlemen. But DeMarco Murray had a blow-up game, over 200, I think it was over 250 yards against the Rams. Which, look, it was the dude's rookie year, his first start in DeMarco Murray's case. That's an amazing thing. But let's keep it real. It was the Rams. Now, this 200-plus yard game that Doug Martin had, again, absolutely amazing. But it was the freaking Raiders in a game where his team still lost, if I remember correctly. Look, if you look at his numbers throughout the year,
yeah,
Doug Martin is more consistent than DeMarco Murray, but a flash in the pan is not a rookie of the year. Go ahead, Johnny Stats.
No, what I was going to say is that Doug Martin only had was it five games that were over 100 yards last year, and only one of them was against a playoff contender. And that was against Atlanta in the very last game of the season, where Atlanta really didn't care.
That and Atlanta isn't really exactly a great defense either.
And let me tell you this. Let me tell you this, guys, about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Shiano is the kind of guy, and I know him from doing a couple of Rutgers games, you know, before I came out west here. And, you know, Shiano's the kind of guy where it doesn't matter to him if they don't do well the first year, because he has a three-year plan he comes in with to turn teams around.
Mm-hmm.
And he went and he gathered all these great assistants, you know, and I'm not going to pat myself on the back that one of them happens to be a former Army buddy of mine, but he went out and he got some great assistants, and he put them in places where he knew they would succeed. And, you know, when you look at, what Tampa's offense was 3 years ago, and you look at what it's capable of being now, you know, I'd be afraid. If I'm in the NFC South, I'd be really afraid. I'd be hiding because, you know, Drew Brees is about to feel Josh Freeman breathing down his neck.
Yeah, you know, I hear where you're going there, Dr. Bill, for certain. I'll put it this way. The Bucs would prevail in the AFC West without question, and I think it's only fair to mention.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, and I think it's only fair to mention that the Bucs had two starting linemen out for the season in the offseason leading into 2012, so that certainly could have prevented him from getting better numbers. Nick, I'm going to let you go ahead and put a bow on. We've got 2 minutes till the break.
Well, I got to be honest with you. With Doug Martin, I know Joey said 500-yard games, in which one of them is against a playoff team, and it was the final game of the year. Still, I will always bring this back to the one overriding factor in everything. You go out there, and you have to play the game. It doesn't matter if you have the number one ranked defense in the NFL or the 32nd ranked defense in the NFL. You have to go out and perform on a daily basis. Alfred Morris, Doug Martin, Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, and RG3 all went out there and performed to the best of their capabilities and the best of their abilities. And this was an amazing year for rookies in the NFL. I mean, you mentioned Ryan Tannehill. Brandon Weeden had his moment. You know, had his moments. The rookies this year that came out really did impress me. And I'm hoping that, you know, after the 2013 draft comes around, that are we going to see another rookie class like we did this year? So
Not a quarterback.
Yeah, I was about to say
running back, probably. As running back, probably, not a quarterback.
Right.
Well, before we go on the break here, there's one more thing I had to say. See, look, the whole come out and play thing, look, it's cute. It probably should be, if it isn't mentioned in Rudy, Rudy should probably re-edit it so a point like that is made in it. Here's the truth, boys. If Colin Kaepernick hadn't toppled the Bears' defense, hadn't beat Drew Brees and Tom Brady in the shootout, when he got smashed by the Seahawks, does anybody really think he would have stayed starting for the 49ers? I don't. So don't give me this thing about easy opponents don't matter. I'm just saying.
Not me. Didn't come from me. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something. Something I learned, guys, not as a high school coach, as a graduate college assistant coach. No game is an easy game. No game is a surefire win. You never coach guys to look past an opponent because no game – no game is an easy game, just like, no mission in the military is an easy day.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. I mean, preparation going to a game is certainly way different than analysis after the fact. So, yeah, absolutely. If you're looking to face, if you're looking to face the Chiefs with, Brad Hoyer starting, you still need to take them seriously. The whole law of any given Sunday certainly applies. So let's go ahead and jump into the break, gentlemen. We are one past the hour here, and you are listening to The Student of the Game on the Sports Chronicles Radio Network. And just want to talk to you real quick about iDraft. That's right, from the makers of iScout, iDraft. iDraft puts your knowledge of college football talent to the test. Do you understand your team needs better than the experts? Well, take a shot at it. Show them how it's done. We're talking about something completely different for an experience. This isn't your same old fantasy routine or misguided mock draft. This is the real deal. iDraft. You're on the clock. Go ahead and check them out at www.idraft.com. So definitely got a lot of hype going into this, gentleman. And I believe if I understand correctly that there is a contest there where if you register your email address and participate, you can, if you have your draft be closer for your team than anybody else compared to what they actually draft, you might actually have an opportunity to win tickets to the Super Bowl in New York in 2014 and possibly get an opportunity to freeze your keister off there. But help me out a little with this though, Nick, or Dr. Bill, whoever wants to jump in. Ted Sundquist is associated with this product. He helped put it together there. You may recognize him as somebody who was in the running for the Jets GM job at one point there. So definitely some football knowledge to be had. And I believe we're going to have a draft event, Dr. Bill, correct me, April 18th.
There you go.
Where he will be moderating.
April 18th over on the Fro, which is offtalkradio.com/football-reporters, over on our feed from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern. We will have our mock draft. We will do the first two rounds. We will be drafting for all 32 teams. We'll have 32 GMs, and Ted will moderate, and Stephen Burkett will assist me in. Ted will be the resident expert, and Stephen will assist me in moderating. And Nick, I know you're going to be there. Kyle, I know you're going to be there, and we're in the process of inviting some really good talent to. Work the various team tables, and I just want one of those helmet phones. I've been looking for a helmet phone for about 10 years, and I walk into a we have a lot of antique shops here where I live in this part of Arizona, and I walk into this antique shop, and there is a helmet phone. Unfortunately, it's a team that I absolutely despise, and I could never buy that phone and display it and use it in my house.
New York Jets?
No, not quite. I don't dislike the Jets. My problem is that Jets fans have always been nasty to the other team in town, and unfortunately, they're not a class act when they do that. So, that's my team. But, I've been professional for a long time now. But, I grew up going to, those games in the Giant Stadium, and even before that,
in Yankee Stadium, probably not much older than Nick's kids are now, you know, so.
Well, I'll just say I wouldn't feel right about displaying a Cowboys phone either. That's just me. At any rate.
Kyle knew exactly what I was talking about.
I'm just saying. But
It's bad enough I put the Cowboys football and we couldn't get anybody to take it in a charity auction on our show. You know, to be stuck with a Cowboys phone, too.
I'm sure there are worse fates in life, but I'd still rather not experience that without question. At any rate, gentlemen, let's go ahead and head into our next topic here. And really, it's the one that has hit most profusely ever since the Super Bowl and actually kind of leading up into it. But now that Ray Lewis's retirement and we're talking negotiations and contract with one Joe Flacco, the question of his eliteness has popped up yet again. Joe Flacco is being declared elite by some camps and just absolutely despicable by others. To keep them chomping at the bit, I'm going to have Joey Stats and Nick Waite. Dr. Bill, I'm going to go to you first. Is Joe Flacco elite in your mind?
You know, before we give him, label him with the E word, and, you know, we were having the same discussion for a long time, for many, many months, about Eli Manning. To me, an elite quarterback is not, you know, how you handle a certain situation on the field. To me, an elite quarterback is how you lead your team, whether or not you make costly mistakes on a consistent basis, or whether or not you make, you know, the once-in-a-while mistake, and like Eli, aw, shucks, you know. do I think Joe Flacco is elite? I think if he's not there yet, he'll be there soon enough. You know, watching him, again, having covered the Colonial Athletic Association where he came out of the University of Delaware, you know, watching him play a couple of games in person and covering, you know, in fact, I saw a Delaware-Villanova playoff game several years back where, you know, he was the turning factor. Villanova had all the cards stacked in their favor. They had a good quarterback. They had a great running back slash receiver slash kick returner. They had a good offensive line. And, you know, Joe Flacco gets in there and he just slices the Villanova defense like it's a brick of American cheese in the deli. Okay? And, you know, he just ripped them apart. And, you know, Joe can do some things if he's given time, if he has the right lineman in front of him. And I think the two of them, I think Joe and Mike Ower are going to ride each other's horses right to the Hall of Fame together.
Wow. Joe Flacco, future Hall of Famer. Interesting concept.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. All he needs is one more Super Bowl win like this one. And, you know.
Yeah, I think that's true. And
and that would be two more wins than Dan Fouts.
Well,
he's in the Hall of Fame.
Or two more than Dan Marino, but I mean, are we really ready to compare him to those numbers yet? I don't.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. I'm not even talking about numbers wise. I'm talking about personality and leadership wise.
Oh yeah, and let me be clear. It's not that I think that Joe Flacco is a bad guy when I'm talking about this. Whether you know he's elite or not, he's been one who has had to take a lot of criticism, you know, since he came in. Even though he made the playoffs as a rookie, he and Matt Ryan both that year, and he actually went further than Matt Ryan did, which, you know, that's a completely different discussion with Matt Ryan that, well,
right,
isn't in the context of this episode, but the new Tony Romo, that's right, I said it. Anyways, since...
Unfortunately, Matt Ryan's ice cubes have melted, so it's not Matty Ice.
Exactly.
Matty Puddle now.
Matty Puddle, I like that. At any rate, Johnny Stats, since you are visiting, and, well, this is, after all, you know, on Knicks Network, so to speak, I'm going to go ahead and let you go first as the visitor, sir. Your thoughts on one Joe Flacco.
Hit me, Joey. Well, hit me hard.
Well, I'm going to start off in true debate fashion by defining the word elite according to Sporting Scouts. This is off straight off of ESPN. Is players that demonstrate rare abilities that can create mismatches that have obvious impact on a game. But the important part is the next line. It says, rates as one of the top players in the league at his position. Now, they carry an overall grading scale in the scouting report
between a 90 and a 100. After the Super Bowl, Aaron Rodgers was rated at 97, Tom Brady 96, Drew Brees 95, and Peyton Manning 90. Those are all considered elite quarterbacks. I believe everybody that's on this panel would agree.
Oh, yeah.
Those four quarterbacks are elite. Now, Joe Flacco, after the Super Bowl, is still rated at an 82, according to scouting reports. Now, with that, I'm going to go over to my table I made up of stats. Completion rate, Joe Flacco is 19th overall. Pass attempts, he's 14th. Yards, 14th. Yards per average, 14th. Total touchdowns, he's in a three-way tie for 15th with Carson Palmer. ESPN quarterback rating is 12th. And yards per game, 16th. Now, out of everybody else of the four, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Peyton Manning, there is only two stat columns that any of them are outside of the top 10 in. Those people are elite. I can give you the numbers of all their touchdowns, yards, and all that stuff, but that's just going to take up time. And, I mean, it's not worth it when I can just tell you that there are only two numbers outside of the top 10 in all the same stats. Joe Flacco doesn't have a single stat in the top 10.
And this is in the context of performances in 2012, just for the record.
Yeah, this is regular season and playoffs of 2012.
Okay.
So I must say, taking that into context, his playoff run, 11 touchdowns, zero interceptions, was absolutely incredible. And in my mind, do I believe that he deserves to get paid? Yes. 35 to 40 million tops. He does not deserve Tom Brady, which is 47, Aaron Rodgers, which is 40s, Drew Brees, which we all know is ridiculous, 100 million or whatever, Peyton Manning, which is mid-40s too. I mean, he doesn't deserve that type of money, but he does deserve to get paid $35 million. And does he deserve that E-word title? Absolutely not. If he starts getting his stats up into the top 10, then I'll start looking at him. But when you look at the four quarterbacks that people, like, when they look at the league and they say, that man is a, like, the best quarterback, people that are actually in that conversation, he is nowhere near that conversation. I said on my show, East vs. West Sports, the other day, that I don't even consider Joe Flacco my top 32. Granted, I might have been exaggerating a little bit, but that's how I feel sometimes when you watch him play and put up the worst passer rating of a quarterback ever, which he did last year.
Wow.
Now, when you look at Joe Flacco also, the only way he made it to the playoffs was not by his arm. He did win, 10 games last year? Congratulations. Though, one play goes wrong. 4th and 29, hey, diddle-diddle, Ray Rice up the middle, mm-hmm. goes wrong, he's not in the playoffs. The kick versus the Patriots, week 4 of the regular season, I believe it was, where it literally went over the upright, hair to the right, he's not in the playoffs. Those are all plays made by other people on his team that got him to where he was, where he did his thing. And I'll give him credit. His playoffs were incredible, and he deserved to win that Super Bowl, but he is not an elite quarterback.
And if I may be so bold, the play of someone not on his team and won, Dez Bryant, kept him alive against the Cowboys. A game that would have not been in the playoffs if it went a different direction. That's an awful lot of interesting bits of support there, as far as assistance he's needed. But Nick, let me go ahead and jump to you. Your turn, sir. Joe Flacco, elite.
Let me first say that listening to Joey's stats break everything down warms my heart, because the guy always comes prepared. The guy always comes ready to roll. But I'm the guy that says stats are only 50% of the game. When he came into the league from the University of Delaware, he was handed the starting job of the Baltimore Ravens, one of the most elite teams in the NFL for a very, very long time. He made the playoffs his rookie year with Matt Ryan, and everybody thought, oh, okay, they did it because of the defense. Now, the funny thing, though, along this journey is he's made the playoffs every year that he's been in the NFL.
He has led his team to the playoffs and very deep into the playoffs 3 of those 5 years. Now, here's another thing. When you talk about elite quarterbacks, you talk about winners. Name me another quarterback that has won more away games in playoff history. It's not Joe Montana. It's not Steve Young. It's not Tom Brady. It's not Peyton Manning. It's not Drew Brees. And it's not Aaron Rodgers. That person is Joe Flacco. Joe Flacco has won 7 away games, which normally in the NFL is completely unheard of. He would have had 8 if the referees didn't just completely hand New England the game last year. That's right, Joey, I said it. Now, another thing is, you talk about having some of the worst games rating-wise for, you know, for a season, which I understand. So does that mean that the day that Drew Brees threw 5 interceptions, that doesn't make him elite? Does that mean that Aaron Rodgers, when he has pedestrian days like the first 3 weeks of the season, does that not make him elite? Tom Brady getting his butt handed to him in New England by the same Baltimore Ravens this season, in which they made him look mortal, does that not make him elite? Now, there are a lot of Giant fans out there, with all due respect, that say, well, Eli Manning's got 2 Super Bowls. He's elite. No, he's not. I mean, yeah, he's all shucks and everything like that. Yeah, he's won 2 Super Bowls. But take away his 2011 season, what has he really done? Okay? I mean, he's got just as much, maybe more talent than Joe Flacco. I don't consider Eli elite. I consider him the 6th best quarterback in the NFL, but I don't consider him elite. I have my top 5. My top 5 are the Mount Rushmore. The top 4 are the Mount Rushmore, which you named, Joey. Number 5 to me is Joe Flacco. When you put somebody that can go out for 5 consecutive years to have a record of 60-36, which is the best 5-year span to start with in NFL history, you must put that into consideration. The playoff record must be put into consideration. And the playoff run that he just had, which was one of the best playoff runs that any quarterback in the NFL ever had, must be put into consideration. So you can bring this all the stats you want. I totally understand that, and I'm not denying that. But you must look at the overall picture of things. I mean, when it comes down to it, the guy is a born winner. We could talk about, hey, diddle, diddle, Ray Rice in the middle. We could talk about Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and Rolling Magada and all that. Hakuna Matata, whatever his name is.
Hey, you will respect Haloti Nada, sir.
Here's another thing. I know, Fat Man Syndrome. I'm sorry. Now, here's another thing, though. He was given the keys when Ken Cameron was let go. Him and Ray Rice, okay? I'm telling you this. When Jim Caldwell was given the keys to the offense, he knew exactly what needed to be done, and that offense went humming. You give Joe Flacco and Anquan Boldin, okay. You give Joe Flacco Torrey Smith, Dennis Pitta, Ray Rice. He's got a very good offense around him. But he's the guy that makes the engine roll. 60-36. And, guys, that's pretty much my argument as to why he's elite. I mean, I can't, I'm not as statistic, as they would say, as Joey Stats.
Okay, well, there you go. So there's a take there. Now, for me, and with all due respect, Nick, I'm unfortunately not in your camp. For a dude that is trying to say...
I wasn't expecting that.
But for a dude that wants to preach about how it's not all about stats, having to listen to 60 and 36 in a year where they've had among the best NFL, or in years, I should say, where they've had among the best players at various positions on defense to bail him out is absolute lunacy. I mean, come on. It's not like it's Ray Lewis, Ed Reed, and you can hate on Helody not all you want, but what about Terrell Suggs? You know, only the defensive player of the last year. I think it was last year. I could have that wrong. I don't know. And Jim Caldwell took over late in the season, and I will grant, certainly, an upgrade on Cam Cameron, who realized his career he made in San Diego telling Phillip Rivers to give the ball to LaDainian Tomlinson couldn't work anymore. Well, it kind of did because he had Ray Rice for a while, but it stopped working. Hey, diddle diddle, Ray Rice up the middle was the final win before a 4-5 loss streak. And they beat the Giants in week 16 to at least not make the end of the season, the final quarter of the season, a complete goose egg in the win column. But if it's not about stats, I am compelled to bring up one, Jacoby the Duck Hunter Jones. Because the reason why I call him Joe the Fowl, F-O-W-L, because he throws a lot of ducks, Flacco, is because Jacoby Jones the Duck Hunter twice bailed him out. And of course, the very famous Broncos defeat where probably one of the missed poorly thrown and poorly misplayed passes in recent playoff history occurred. And then another duck slips over Deshaun Golston and company in San Francisco for another touchdown. I won't get into how the fact he wasn't even worthy to be Super Bowl MVP, let alone given the title of elite. Elite, you have to be the top five at your position, I think. That's how it was discussed by my panel. And your top five leaves out a Ben Roethlisberger, for example, a guy who has carried his team multiple times, and were it not for constant injury because he's carrying his team all the time, his numbers would be better. It leaves out Matt Stafford, who has no help on defense. And sure, he has Megatron. I get that. But that's one weapon, whereas Joe Flacco has Torrey Smith, Anquan Boldin, Hall of Fame-worthy talent itself right there, Ray Rice, Dennis Pitta. That's someone everywhere on the field, man. Not every quarterback has that luxury. And Flacco only now is really doing anything with it. Now, I'll grant, compared to other quarterbacks in Ravens history, I'm taking Steve McNair out because he was good. I mean, you know, Trent Dilfer, Troy Smith, you know, real winners. I got you. He's better than everyone else. And the fact that he's going to make what he's going to make is probably because Michael Vick got overpaid and pulled the scale up for everybody else. But paying him ahead of Paul Kruger, for example, is a mistake because that team is still defensive-centric. Everybody leaves out the part where, towards the end of the game, Jim Caldwell's so great, 4-5 losses in the last few games. Everyone seems to forget that. Oh, and by the way, one of them was to, you know, Charlie Batch, to just kind of rub in a little further there. Just throwing it out there, boys. Anyways, so we've got about 6 minutes left. Dr. Bill, I'm going to go ahead and pass it to you so you can bring some civility and reason to put a bow on any final thoughts you may have for the evening, or staying with the flag of topic if it's up to you. And let's move towards some final thoughts for the show here coming up.
Yeah, you know, you could argue that he may not be elite yet, but he has won a Super Bowl now, and he did get there. So I'll leave it at that. You know, we'll let him show everybody what he does the next 2 or 3 years, and we'll revisit that conversation. You know, Joey, your stats are really on, but they don't, you know, include the fact that he did win a Super Bowl, and he did have an incredible playoff run. So, you know, that's, again, stats are important and I like them, but they don't always paint the whole picture. You know, sometimes you have to sit down and watch the game, like we say here on any given Sunday. You know, I'm, and again, I appreciate you guys having me tonight. I would just say that at this point, this is going to be one of the most interesting off seasons you're going to see in a very long time. The salary cap is only going up by $100,000. There are a lot of teams that are still over the cap. That's why you see all these players being released.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them will be re-signed at less money.
Dr. Bill?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, there it is. Yeah, I got you now.
Okay, yeah, like I said, you know, we're going to see a lot of we're going to see a lot of free agent movement this year, and we're going to see a lot of guys that are going to be surprised to be released because of the salary cap.
Yeah, it's always tough to see that that salary cap casualty, and this is the first time lately that there isn't an ever so slight increase in the salary cap due to whatever collective bargaining negotiations may have taken place. So that is something. We'll see which front offices were truly smart enough to prepare and which were not. And you may be surprised at some of the teams who are having salary cap issues. I believe the Steelers, for example, a very solid front office, are one of the teams in question struggling. So that will be very, very interesting. Joey Stats, let me jump over to you. Oh, go ahead, Dr. Bell.
I just want to leave you guys with this one last thing. Joey, now that Chris Canty is available, there's one more guy that Bill Belichick could cherry pick off the Giants.
And Dr. Bill, before you go ahead and leave us your Twitter and your information, please.
Yeah, of course. Obviously, the Sports Chronicles Radio Network has a sister network. It's Football Reporters Online, and that's blogtalkradio.com/football-reporters, and we've got a couple of shows a week. A few of them are in hiatus right now, but we're still doing the Thursday night throw weekly, and you could also catch me on Fridays at the STN.com with our colleague Brad Kurtzberg. We do commercial-free Football Friday. It's an hour of all your football news and views. And, of course, on Twitter, Ask Dr. Football, all one word, all lowercase. And certainly my email, you can ask me a question at any time, askdrfootball@gmail.com, and we will certainly endeavor to get the answer to your question. And, guys, I actually got a request today for somebody who's looking for a job in Guadalajara, Mexico, and says he knows everything there is to know about the NFL, and he would like to come work for us. So, you know, who knows? We'll give just about anybody an internship who wants to work hard.
There you go. All right, Dr. Bill, thanks a lot. Appreciate you being on. Joey Stats, with about two minutes left.
Yeah, pleasure, guys.
With about 2 minutes left, final thoughts, sir, and leave us your info.
You know, I'm just going to make it quick. I really enjoyed being here. I want to thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. Nick, the only reason I agreed to do this is because of how much I respect you as an NFL and sports mind. So I appreciate you coming on. And,
90 seconds.
Let me get your thoughts, because I know we're going to go back and forth. Also, I want to throw out, hey, you guys can catch me on the GOH radio network. Branch off. We came from TSCRN because they're so grateful to have us, and we were grateful to be there. I am on East versus West Sports on Wednesdays at 8:30. I'm also on BTW, which is Tuesdays at 7 to 9, and also What's Trending Now, which is on Friday, 6:30 to 7:30. Follow me on Twitter at
60 seconds.
And again, Kyle, thank you for having me. Nikki Fig, always a pleasure. Great time. Thank you very much.
An honor and privilege for us as well there, Joey Stats. Nick, 30 seconds. Close it out, sir.
You can find me at Mr. Fick TSC. You can find it towards this radio handle at TSCRN. You can find me on Saturday nights from 10 to midnight along with my good friend and partner, Kyle Nash, the Stat Boy. And this was awesome.
Absolutely was a lot of fun. Indeed, of course, I'm Kyle Nash, the student of the game. Tweet at me at the SOTG, 7:30 on the Sports Chronicles Radio Network out here on the Eastern Time Zone. we're going to be doing probably a show every other week here in the off season, and then we'll crank it back up closer to the draft. At any rate, it's been an honor and privilege to have you all. An excellent debate show. Class dismissed.